The Matt Bubala Show on 720 WGN. As you're cruising around the internet, looking through your social media, sometimes you find a story and you get excited about it, about somebody doing something really adventurous and grand with their life. And you think, that's what I want to do. I want to do something like that. But we can't, right? So we can live through the people that are. Joining us on the phone right now is Cassie DePeckel. She is traveling to every single country in the world, and she's talking to us. Hey, Cassie, how are you?
Hi, Matt. I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm great. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone with us. So, okay, so let's get the basics out here. You're going after a Guinness World Record. What Guinness World Record are you going for?
So the record is for the fastest person to travel to every sovereign nation.
And how many sovereign nations are there right now?
There's 193, but I also count Taiwan, Kosovo, and Palestine. And that's kind of how I get my number, 196.
Okay, so it's called Expedition 196. You can follow her on Facebook and on Instagram. On Instagram, it's at Expedition_196, Facebook.com/Expedition196. You can find out everything about what Cassie is doing. How many of the 196 countries have you visited so far?
I've visited 181 in 16 months, and I have 15 left. I'm leaving tomorrow to finish those last 15.
So wait a minute. You've done how many in 16 months?
181. Yeah, that's a lot.
181 in just 16 months. So
yes.
I just did some quick math on my calculator. That's over 11 countries a month, Cassie. That's a lot. So it's really cool that you're going to be the fastest person to do this, but are you getting to truly enjoy each country? Or are you just getting a very quick taste of them and then having to move on?
Yeah, it's the enjoy factor depends on if I'm meeting with the students or not, because for me, that's really the most important aspect of this expedition. I speak to university students, but it's all about time management. So some countries, you know, I lived in Peru prior to this expedition. I'd only seen like Cusco, Machu Picchu, and Lima, but I was in like Jordan for 2 days on this trip, and I saw like Petra, Dead Sea, met with the mayor, spoke to the university, and saw a lot of Amman. So it's all about time management, but it is very quick. Like, by no means am I just like lounging on the beach ever. As cool as that would be, I do have a lot of responsibilities too. So
yeah,
makes
I imagine.
It tough.
All right, so let's jump back to the beginning here. You're only 27 years old. You started this when you were 26. How in the world do you end up becoming a person trying to pursue this world record? How do you get to this point?
Yeah, I think I wanted a departure from the ordinary somehow. I jumped into all these entrepreneurial books, and I knew I wanted to change. I wasn't really loving where I was at in life. With my career, I wasn't pursuing a career that I wanted to. So I just kind of like found these outlets towards that would influence me towards following my passion. And then I decided to just go with it because I knew it was now or never. And the energy levels and the determination and drive wasn't really going to be there forever. So I decided, okay, I have to follow this quest. Like, I have to make it happen. And so, yeah, I did a bunch of research. Google was my greatest resource. And reached out to a lot of people and just, totally made it happen.
That's really cool that you decided this is what I want to do and you pursued it. What can I ask, like, did you go to college? Did you get a degree? And then you just like, I don't know what I really want to do with my life?
You know, I left a semester short of graduating college, and I actually saved up $2,000 from like lifeguarding one summer between, you know, my last semester. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go travel. I think that my life's passion and career is travel. So I'm just going to go do it. So I traveled to like 25 countries in 2 years, like off of $2,000. And that's when I really backpacked, worked abroad, hitchhiked, really roughed it to try and like figure that aspect of my life out. That was a big first step for me. And people to this day are like, are you finishing college? Like, you should finish college. I'm like, this is my college. Like, this is my last semester. Okay, let's just go with that.
Yeah, I'm still doing a work program. When I finish it, I'll apply for the credits.
Exactly.
But Cassie, I do have to ask you about that because I don't know your family situation at all, but I'm assuming you have a couple of parents who probably were helping pay for college, and then you get to the last semester and you're like, you know what? I'm just not feeling it. I saved up some money. I'm going to go travel. What was the reaction of friends and family when you decided that? They must have thought, oh my God, you're crazy.
Well, you know what? The thing is, I had to support myself through college.
Okay.
I'm one of those people, my brother and I both had to like get out loans. And so we really struggled to like get through college. He's a year and a half younger than me. He's 25. Oops, or 26, something like that. And he's finishing this year. So he kind of had to wait to save up to finish and get the loans out. And that was the same deal. So it was a money issue for me. Like, and I know a lot of people can't finish because of money and loans and needy credit and all this sort of stuff. So Yeah, for me that was a, and I just knew that I had to follow that path of travel to find my ultimate career. I knew I was going to fail as a meteorologist. You know, I'm not a math person. So.
Was that what you were thinking about doing? Were you going to become a meteorologist?
Yeah, that was always my dream. I just wanted to be like the weatherman on TV. Yeah, and you know, the courses were so interesting, but I just failed them, you know? I just did not get good grades in them, but they were so cool. And I was like, all right, you just have to know sometimes what you're good at, what you're not good at, and respect those that knowledge that you have, you know?
All right, so you go traveling around the country at first off, $2,000, you hit 25 countries. I'm sorry, not traveling around the country, traveling around the world. You hit 25 countries off of, starting with just $2,000 that you made over the summer lifeguarding. So when you start out on that quest, do you do this by yourself? Do you talk friends into it?
When I did that separate trip, yeah, I started off with my brother, and we traveled around Europe for a month, and he would travel to, like, one country like per 2 weeks, and I was like, okay, can we maybe hit 5 countries in those 2 weeks? I wanted to just go and like get a nice taste of every country in Europe, and he just wanted to take his time.
Yeah,
it's totally fine, but totally different like traveling styles. And I think it was at that point that I realized I really wanted to travel the entire world and like see every country. So yeah, then I kind of traveled with my brother, but for a month, and then the majority of the time I was alone, and that's when I really got used to traveling alone as well. And this whole trip has been alone too.
Cassie, that's just...
I'm a loner.
It frightens me because you're a beautiful young woman traveling the world, and that just, as a father of a young daughter, it freaks me out a little bit because, you know, we think of the world as this big, bad, scary place. How is it traveling the world alone? Has it been scary and rough, or do you just learn to adjust in where you're going and what you do, or how do you handle that?
Yeah, I've learned to adjust to it. I mean, I'm not someone who gets, like, lonely. I actually, you know, I'm constantly surrounded by people here, like, on this trip in airports and public places. So when I can be alone, I, like, relish it. I'm able to relax a little bit, and it's really great for me. I'm one of those introverted people who, like, I get my energy from being alone, you know? Mm-hmm. But I also love people as well. But, yeah, it's getting tougher and tougher, actually. You know, I find myself in situations where I'm detained at the border or something's not working out, and I'm like, or I'm really, really sick and tired, and I wish someone could just, like, bring me a glass of water or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, man, those are the times when I'm like, okay, I wish I were traveling with someone. But, you know, generally speaking, it's been totally fine, and I'm really used to traveling that way anyways.
All right. When you stay in each country, do you find sort of a host to stay with at first? Are you really just checking into hotels and flying in blind? How do you set that up?
Yeah, usually, so in about 35 of the countries, sponsored in hotels through Skull International, and they also help to organize the meetings where I give keynote sessions to the students. So when I meet with them, they kind of take care of everything for me. However, usually I will, you know, I'll get sponsored at sustainable luxury hotels as well, where I'll promote the hotel and in exchange for a stay. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not doing either one of those, then I'll try and stay at a locally owned establishment, like a bed and breakfast or an Airbnb. And then if worst case scenario, I'll have to stay in like a hotel or something, but very rarely is it like a name brand hotel. That's like very rare. And when it is, you know, there's something wrong because I'm sick and I need to like really just like lay in bed for like a few days.
Yeah.
That's happened like a few times, but that's not too often.
Now, do you have sponsors helping pay for this, or have you had to work a little bit along the way, or how do you, I know that you're speaking at university, so I imagine there's a stipend for that. You mentioned the hotels. How are you handling airfare and incidentals, everything else?
Yeah, in the year and a half prior of starting this expedition, I had to plan out in that year and a half how I was going to find the funding. So in that year and a half, I saved up about $10,000 from, you know, babysitting and odd jobs while I was planning this expedition, but I also had to obtain sponsors. So that's when I obtained the majority of my sponsors. I mean, the trip is not cheap. It's like $198,000 budget.
Wow.
So, and obviously I didn't have all that when I started. I had a good amount of it, but I needed to continue to work towards obtaining sponsors and investors to fulfill the financial goal of the journey. And the investors that I've obtained are contributing to the educational documentary that I'm filming. So that was kind of an incentive for them. So yeah, to this day, I'm continuing to obtain sponsors. It's been like one of the most challenging things. And there was a point when I almost had to quit because I was like, I don't see how I'm going to be able to get any more funding for this. Mm. And then just when you least expect it, things pull through, you know, like you just, it's when you're in your darkest moments that you're able to like find the light, you know? So it's been tough, but yeah, it's a sponsored expedition.
It's called Expedition 196. You can find it on Facebook. You can find it at expedition196.com. Her name is Cassie DePeckel. And when we come back, I want to find out, okay, she's hit 181 already. What's been the most exciting? What's been the scariest? What's the place she'd really want to go back again? We'll find out next. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala Show on 720 WGN. We're speaking with Cassie DePeckel. She is traveling the world. She is going to be the first woman to travel every single country in the world, if all goes as planned, and is hoping to be the fastest person to travel the entire, right? Do I have that right? The Guinness record would be the fastest person or the fastest woman to get around the, explain it to me again. I get confused. You'll be the first woman to hit all 196.
Fastest person.
Fastest person. Fastest human alive to get to every country. Every sovereign nation. And I imagine that changes at times. How long has the number been 193? You're counting as 196. But does that number fluctuate as decades go by? I imagine it has to, right?
Yeah, it does. Countries kind of come and go. I mean, Scotland was on the verge of becoming an independent nation, and then that kind of stopped or ceased. So, yeah, it changes. But according to the UN, it's 193. Guinness actually does count Taiwan, Kosovo, and Palestine as well. So that's why I'm headed to those three as well.
Okay, so 181 down, 15 left. Let's talk about the 15 left first of all. Is there a highlight or because some of the world is considered a dangerous place right now. So is there something you're really excited to still hit, or in something you're a little nervous about the planning of in your remaining 15?
I am nervous about most of them. I saved the best for last. And that actually does come down to visas. These are the most difficult to obtain visas for.
Okay.
So I'm really excited to go to Pakistan. I've always wanted to go to Pakistan and Saudi Arabia as well. And I have 10 countries in Africa and 5 countries in Asia, including the Middle East. I'm a little bit worried about Syria only because of the visa, not going there. I'm actually going to be going there with a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. But that visa is really difficult to obtain right now. I mean, the last thing that they want to issue is a tourist visa. I'm sure that's the last thing on their mind. So that might take a little bit longer. But yeah, other than that, it should be okay. I'm pretty used to that sort of travel. But it should be very interesting.
So for you, it's not really nervousness about being in a country at all. It's nervousness about, can I get the visa to clear so I can get there?
Yeah, it's always getting there. Once I'm there, it's like I'm home free. I can breathe. But there is also issues like getting through the border. You know, I've gotten detained a couple times. And so I was never worried. But ever since those few times that I was detained, I was like, you know what? Now I need to just be on the ball, you know, and really be careful here and make sure that I'm doing everything right, crossing my T's. All that sort of stuff.
So. Well, I imagine your passport has to look like it's so worn with these stamps from everywhere. You go to a country and you show this passport and they're looking at you like, this is odd. What in the world is with you? How have you been to all these? Does that draw a little more attention to you when they see that passport?
Yeah, and that's when they think I'm in the CIA, actually, or they think I'm in like the military. And I'm like, no, and the thing is my passport also has like teeth marks over it because like I bite it when I'm really like I put it in my mouth while I'm trying to get all my stuff sorted, and then so I'm so angry and like gnawing at it. It's like literally my passport is like this like I don't know stress machine sometimes. But on the other side of it, it's like my little best friend.
Yeah, really.
And it sounds really crazy, but
and what a great document to have as a keepsake for all of this. Okay, so in the 181 you visited, what was the most exciting moment? What's the one place or place in time that you've been where when this is all over and you get to do something just for Cassie, you'd say, all right, that's where I'm going back?
Oof, if it's just for me,
I would go back
to the Maldives. I was sponsored at a hotel there, Suniva Sushi. It's this luxury, completely sustainable, regenerative hotel. Like leave no trace, like zero carbon emission, like hotel. And it just is so extremely peaceful there. Great food, really peaceful. I mean, if I were to go and just relax, I'd probably go there. In regards to culture, I would head back over to the Middle East. Like I would go to Jordan for sure. Or maybe even I'm so eager to go to Pakistan. I might go back over there. I mean, I love the Middle East. I love the culture. I would love to really dive into the culture over there a little bit more.
That's so fascinating. Now, as far as every place you've been, and you haven't hit all of the maybe the world hot spots as much as of yet, but you have been to some.
Yeah.
Has there been harrowing moments other than, am I going to get through? Am I going to get the visa in time? Have there been moments where you're like, I have to be very careful here because I am a blonde from Western, you know, and there's dangers in the world? Or am I just way overthinking that? You're like, oh, my God, you guys read the paper too much. You worry too much about that.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one thing. I don't even look at the news anymore when I travel. I know if I did, I'd be like, I'm not going there today. But yeah, I think two of the places that I had to watch out a little bit were Somalia. You know, they had to take everyone, like, in any hotel you stay in, they have to take you in an armored vehicle.
Wow.
And they have men with machine guns kind of in front and behind the armored vehicle. And there's explosions everywhere. And it's really, really, I mean, that's the most war-torn country I've been to. And I was a little bit worried. I wanted to go out and experience the, you know, the, like, Mogadishu. So they took me out, excuse me, and we really just kind of were only to hop in and hop out, like, for 3 minutes at a time. They're like, there's Al-Qaeda over there, and you can't tell, but we know, we had word that they were coming in this area, so we got to be really quick. So that was really, you know, interesting. Scary, too, obviously. And then the other one would be in North Korea. That, you know, I like was at the border of North Korea and South Korea, and I was shaking the hand with one of the North Korean guards. It was the same day that they shot the missile, and like it hit Japanese waters back in August. And he shook my hand. He like literally almost broke my bones. It was the strongest handshake I'd had in my life. He's like, "We're ready to launch at you in the States," and I was just like, you know, listen, I'm here on peace. Okay, I'm just here to be peaceful." So
wait, a North Korean guard shook your hand and said, "We're ready to launch at you."
Yeah. Like in America.
Oh, okay.
They really don't like Americans over there. Yeah, it was a really intense moment, you know, and I was like, I'm not scared. You know, I know we're strong over here, you know, and that there have to be a lot for that to actually happen. But it was a really powerful moment, like probably one of the most powerful on this expedition.
So wait, were you
looking at me in the eye?
You were in North Korea or at the border?
I was in North Korea. And then we took this trip to the border of South Korea, but we didn't go into South Korea.
How did you get how did you get into North Korea? Was it hard to get that visa?
For Americans, it's just really expensive. Mainly Chinese tourists go to North Korea, and it's not too, so like a 3-day tour for them is like $300. For an American, it's like $1,200. It's crazy expensive for Americans. I mean, they really get you, but you can go.
But they'll let you go. You don't have to just be Dennis Rodman. Somebody who wants to pay can actually go.
Yeah, if you have the money.
Yeah. Did you feel nervous there at all? I mean, the guy's basically threatening your country, your homeland. Did you feel unsafe at all in North Korea?
I feel like it's all talk and no walk with kind of what they do, so what they say sometimes, you know. But, you know, generally speaking, I felt totally fine. I was a little bit nervous, you know, photos. I was, like, very careful, you know, with that. You had to be very careful. So it was like walking on eggshells, like one little wrong, you know, move or photo or look, you know, you have to, it's really, so yeah, I did feel a little bit. And then when I went to go leave, they said there was an issue with my visa, you know, and I couldn't go. And so there was this huge, I almost missed my flight, and I was like, oh man. So it was a little bit nerve wracking those whole 3 days. I was pretty much awake.
I imagine that's got to make you a little nervous in a country like that. Maybe not nervous for yourself personally, like from, you know, terrorism or an attack, but with countries that are not necessarily friendly to the U.S., if I take a picture, if I do something, if they think I'm spying or something, if I end up in a jail here, then I don't know how easy it's going to be to see daylight again. You know, if you're really cut off from the world, I imagine you are very careful about that and think about that, right?
Yeah, and I actually stayed in the same hotel that American student stayed in and took that picture or whatever, that whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I had a cup of like coffee in their cafe, and then I took the coffee cup to their breakfast room, had my coffee there, then left that cup in the breakfast room, and I went back. And she's like, "Oh no, you have to bring that cup back over here." I'm like, "But this is the same, like it's one hotel. It's like, you know." She's like, "No, you bring it." I was like, "Okay, you know what? I'm just going to bring it over.
I'm not raising any problems here."
No problems with me.
That's funny.
So, you definitely have to be aware, you know.
Well, it's very cool. Now, so this ends hopefully soon. You got to hit 15 more. What's the deadline that you have to get it done by to achieve your record?
Well, the previous American guy, he did it in 3 years and 3 months. So I have that I've done it in 16 months, so I really have a lot of leeway time here. But I'm looking to finish. Yeah, I'm looking to finish around Christmas. There'll probably be about two countries that I have to go to, which I'll probably try and go to in January, because with the Guinness record, you can't be in one country for more than 14 days. So if I come back, I have to keep leaving the country every 14 days, would get annoying and expensive. So I would like to just kind of get those kind of finished. And they're just those last two visas.
Do you have to like go to a new country every 14 days, or can you step into Canada for a minute and then come back, or Mexico?
I think you just have to leave the country and come back. Yeah, I don't think it's new. At least I may have to check on that, but no.
Now,
I think you just have to leave the country.
Cuba just reopened to U.S., but I imagine you had already been there. You had already gotten that done, or did you do it after President Obama opened those relations back up?
Well, it's interesting because I went a couple weeks ago, and they don't technically issue tourist visas, mm-hmm. but when you go to check in for your flight, there's an option to click support the Cuban people, and that's like technically a tourist, you're going to support the people and their culture, but they don't have the option tourist. And then you have to go and pay for like a tourist card, so it doesn't really make any sense. It's kind of confusing, but yeah, you can go straight from Miami to Cuba, and make sure to bring cash, because I didn't, and I would have almost been left on the streets if the taxi driver didn't take me into his home.
Seriously,
because
there is no ATMs in Cuba.
There are, but they don't take U.S. debit or credit cards or PayPal or anything.
Not everything is open back up as of yet.
No.
That's good to know. That's very smart to know. Any other advice like that, if somebody was going to just in general traveling the world or traveling outside of our comfort, anything that is an ironclad rule that people should remember if they're traveling around the world?
I just make sure to know about visas in advance, because sometimes, you'll look on Google, it'll tell you one thing, travel.gov will tell you a whole other thing, and then like a visa service or their own embassy will tell you a completely other thing. So always go to their embassy website for the latest information, because it's happened to me where I'll like go on the travel.gov, like U.S. government website for visas, see if I need a visa, and they say no, and then I go there and I need a visa, and so I'm stuck, and at that point. So definitely always go to the embassy, their embassy website to find out about the visa, and always carry cash on you, like copious, if you can, amounts, because you never know when you're going to be stranded somewhere.
And Cassie,
take cards.
You mentioned that you were filming a documentary. When this wraps up, what can we expect to see or hear from you afterwards?
So I'm filming this educational documentary that's going to be used hopefully in part with a toolkit for high schools and universities, along with a book series that I'm going to be writing with the University of Students of Christ University in Bangalore. But I'm also developing a universal student internship program to address two of the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And that'll kind of like finance students towards doing these sort of expeditions towards creating a major change in our world, positive change. And then hopefully a separate book that's going to be more about my journey and motivation, and people can kind of learn from that. And then, hopefully a TV show like Anthony Bourdain, because he has the best job in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, you're living it. You're doing it right
that
now.
That would be amazing.
Without doing the TV show. I mean, you're seeing the entire world before you're 30, and nobody can really say that. It's so cool. So much fun to follow. At Expedition 196, you can follow her on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere. You can search Cassie DePeckel at Expedition 196. And find her and follow along. And we're going to stay in touch with you. We'd love to check back in and see how things are going, okay?
Great. Thanks so much, Matt. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
I don't know what she's going to have left to do after she turns 30, but I bet it'll be interesting. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN.